will do anything to get comfort, won't we? Sometimes we'll implement anything, plug in anything, try and just get comfort no matter what it takes. Sometimes at the cost of sabotaging what we're doing, where we're headed. And we're in this brand new series starting today and then all through September. It's called Breaking Free from Idols of Our Age. And I was thinking yesterday, kind of planning the service out a little bit, and I realized in my text, I think a better title is actually Breaking Free from Idols That Steer Our Steps. Because like that, the comfort video, the guy in the racing thing, his desire for comfort really steered his steps. And all through the text as I was writing this past week, I was like, there are so many things that steer our steps. So the series on breaking free from idols that steer our steps, we're looking at four different idols, and I wonder if you can relate to this. There would be comfort, control, approval, and power. We've got three resources for you. The bulletin is loaded with a bunch of things, but there are two specific things in your bulletin. You notice that the bulletin notes are a little bit, actually a lot different. For this particular sermon series, we're totally restructuring the notes. Each sermon on this particular subject of idols will have a very particular pattern that we follow all four Sundays. So the sermon notes, you got to take notes. I can't really encourage you enough. We've got lots of one-liners. We'll have the answers on the screen. Second thing, though, as we really kind of plug community groups and community group leaders, there's also a community group study guide, sermon study guide in the bulletin. Leaf through your little library there. You can use that for your own individual growth, or you can use it as your community group or for your community group. Thirdly and lastly, I'm actually going through a Tim McKellar book called Counterfeit Gods. Anybody heard of it? Anybody read it? I see a couple hands. I found it to be instrumental for my own life, encouraging but also convicting. And as I was reading through it, I was thinking, yep, me. So I stopped reading it and threw it away. No, I'm just kidding. I got it back out of the trash. But I was also looking up the internet yesterday, kind of great quotes from this book. Like I just Googled quotes from Counterfeit Gods. And there are just a lot of knee-deep, life-changing comments in here. I hate to sound hyperbolic or exaggerating, but I can't encourage you enough to read this for yourself. So we're speaking about the comfort god today, the idol of comfort. So we've got comfort, control, approval, and power. Yesterday I had a pretty long day. I was helping a friend out with a project. Helped him out as well on Friday. Friday was wicked hot. Yesterday was nice and breezy over in Oakland. And so I get home kind of later in the afternoon. It's not really what I wanted to do all day. And I was painting, past career, not something I love to do. Painting windows on a second story, even worse. So I get home. I'm like, all right, how do I take care of myself? So I'm thinking, I just need a little bit of comfort. Literally, that's what I said to myself. I need some refreshment. I need some comfort. So I stop at Mulberry's, a little grocery store in our town, and I get Joe's Peach Tea. Any Joe's Tea fans? So I get Joe's Peach Tea. I know that I can get it, and it's going to be ice cold coming out of their refrigerator. So I get home, and I'm hungry. So I decide to make a little food, and I put my iced tea on the counter, and it gets warm. So I have my dinner, and I go outside, and I start drinking my tea. I'm like, this is not the comfort I had in mind. And not only Joe's tea really, really good, but there's a little bit of caffeine in there. So for someone with Tourette's, caffeine is a major trigger for Tourette's. So if you see me twitching a little bit extra today, it's because I had caffeine. So not only did I have this ideal comfort thing in mind that was going to be cold iced tea, and it ended up being warm, then it ended up having caffeine in it, and it's causing me to tick a little bit more. But I said to myself, I know it's worth it. Literally, whenever I have something that I know it's going to cause me to do or be whatever, and it might relate to patients or Tourette's or something else, I have to go through this conversation and say, is it worth it? And usually the answer is yes. And then I regret it the next day. So the tea didn't work out, and so I'm done with dinner, I'm done with my tea, and it was a healthy meal. And I don't know if you've ever had this where you have a really, really good meal or you eat something and you're like, you know what, that just didn't do it. It just wasn't enough. And for me, you know, I am a cookie fiend, okay? My idol right up front, comfort idol. I'm also have an idol that I worship. It's called control. Then I realized, wait a minute, I'm also approval. So I'm comfort, control, and approval. It's okay to not be okay in this church, so just go ahead and love me. Some of us are going to find out that we're all four, and that's really, really bad. But again, it's okay not to be okay, and Jesus can transform your life. So the meal wasn't enough. And me being a cookie fiend, I was like, I need some cookies. So I rifled through the cabinets, and all we had was Oreos. Any Oreo lovers here? I don't know what it is about Oreos. It's kind of like KFC, right? There's something in there that causes you to crave for it nightly. You guys know what movie that came from? You got it. So I Married an Axe Murderer. So you can never really just eat one Oreo, can you? In our house, we have a 3-cookie rule. I grew up with it, doesn't make any sense, but we have a 3-cookie rule. None of us obey it. So I had 3 Oreos, sat down on the sofa, and I was like, that wasn't enough. So long story short, or long story whatever, after 8 Oreos, I was like, there's still a little bit more milk in my container here. I just need one more. So I know that for some reason, you know, you just can't stop with Oreos, and they are so comforting for me. But then after 9, just kind of get a little sick, huh? At least I do. You know, my sugar stomach's a little sensitive to sugar, or maybe it's just normal not to eat 9 Oreos. So Joe's tea didn't work out to comfort me, and the Oreos certainly didn't work out to comfort me, and I regretted it. So what I experienced in that scenario after kind of having this sermon in my head is that even I, who knows better, quote unquote, I was like, you're chasing these comfort things that don't comfort you. You're hoping for things that they're not going to provide. And not only did they not provide what you were hoping for, but you actually suffered because you gave in to those. Now, later that night, maybe around 10 o'clock, I went to bed and I was comforting myself a little bit more, and I was watching a show on my phone. And then I decided, you know, maybe I need a little bit more comfort. So I was going to watch one more episode, which would have taken me to 11:30. But the tea came to mind, the Oreos came to mind. I thought to myself, I'm going to try something different because another show is not going to comfort me. So I put the phone away, put the alarm on, put it under my pillow, and I was like, I'm going to try this God thing out. Imagine that. So I laid there for a half an hour and just prayed, thought through the sermon, thanked God for stuff for the day, and fell asleep. So the transition was, the things I'm chasing for comfort just really didn't promise. They just really didn't deliver. And we're going to find today from the text and the story and the outline that really only Jesus delivers when it comes to meeting what we need. So comfort, control, approval, and power. Now, if you're a little bit like me, you've transitioned from the summer into the fall, right? And I wonder if for some of us, our routine's a little bit different. I wonder if our schedules maybe amp up a little bit, right? The children are going all new different places. The spouses have a little bit more work. Our schedule's amped up. College is in session, right? I don't know if I'm alone on this, but just for some reason, fall kicks in and the hamster wheel starts spinning even faster. And it triggers lots of other things. So if you look on board, this is kind of a metaphor or a figurative image of the hamster wheel. You guys know what I mean by the hamster wheel? Like the hamster wheel life, you just jump on and it runs your life. So we're in the middle there, in the middle of the gear, and it's supposed to be a hamster wheel. But what Nathan did so well is he realized that the hamster wheel is not only connected to other things in life, but it actually turns other things in life. And as we are busier in the fall, or maybe all of the time, what I've experienced is that we sometimes just kind of put our head down and we plow for what is right in front of us. And two things happen. When we're consumed with the busyness or just consumed with life, something under the hood or behind the scene we default to. And it's usually comfort, control, approval, and power. And not only do we default to it, but we're sort of blind and numb to the fact there are lots of other things triggering or influencing why we do what we do. And the busyness of life, or life in general, sort of blinds us to those idols we're worshiping or following. Like, we're so busy, think we're too deaf or too blind to notice that something else is steering our steps. So I hope you can relate to this as we kind of move forward. And you kind of can begin asking yourself, am I worshiping comfort? Am I worshiping control? Or is approval steering my steps? Or is power steering my steps? No matter how much we think we're worshiping God, or we're following Jesus, or Jesus is steering our steps, John Calvin reminds us that our hearts are an idol factory. Isn't that a great phrase? No matter how much we think that Jesus is steering our steps, the reality is our hearts are an idol factory. And our text today kind of helps us with that. Real quick, first point in your bulletin would simply be like, what is idolatry? Idolatry is valuing something more than God. Idolatry can be anything, good or bad, that we value more than God. In our text today, we come upon a young man who approaches Jesus and says, Lord, what do I have to be saved or rescued or to follow you or to be in God's arms? And Jesus says, give up everything. But his idol, his comfort idol, kind of gets in the way. If you want to follow along, we're on page 897 in your Bible. Mark chapter 10, verse 17. Page 897. It's the story of a rich young man who pursues Jesus. So verse 17, chapter 10, verse 17. As Jesus was setting out on a journey, a man ran up to him. He knelt down before Jesus and asked him, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Or in other words, what must I do to be rescued? What must I do to be saved? What must I do to sort of be in the loving arms of God? And verse 18 continues, why do you call me good? Jesus asked him. No one is good except for God alone. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and mother. The man said to Jesus, teacher, I've kept all of these from my youth. I love this phrase. Looking at him, Jesus loved him and said to him, you lack one thing. Go sell all you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. But he was dismayed by this demand, and he went away grieving because he had many possessions. So this man, he couldn't follow Jesus because his possessions were more important. His possessions had really become an idol for him. Now, possessions aren't bad. They're not wrong. They're not evil. But for him, and sometimes us, our possessions and many other things take the place of God. Like the word idolatry said, it's anything we value more than valuing God. And idols can be anything. Like in the ancient days, it was much easier to spot what an idol was. Like you could debrief or self-reflect and be like, yeah, I'm worshiping possessions. I'm worshiping my riches. I'm worshiping a golden statue. I'm clearly worshiping the sun, the moon, the stars, cows, monkeys, right? It was clear. It was tangible. And we might think those idols are silly, but some of our idols are silly too. Some of our idols are a little bit more silly than some of those things, right? Sometimes we unintentionally value relationships more than God, sports more than God. What season is in right now? We've got fantasy football. What else is kind of on the radar? Baseball. Maybe fantasy football is enough, right? I know we're into fantasy. I'm seeing some heads nod right now and big smiles. Yeah, so we sometimes value or give space more to things in life than we do God. Other things we might value more than God would be money, sex, work, vacation, other possessions more than God. Again, idols are anything we value more than God. And as you look at those things, they're not bad things. They're actually good things. Point number two, in terms of why in the world think about idols. Like, why have a series on idols? So, point number two is the fact that idols lead us to suppress the truth of God, and they cause us to question the character of God. So idols lead us to suppress the truth of God, and they lead us to suppress or question the character of God. That's point number two in your bulletin. Here's how we suppress the truth. If we have an idol or something we value more than God, we really, really want that thing. That thing we value more, actually, we kind of begin to make conditions for. We kind of begin to kind of make okay in our life. And what happens is, because we want that thing to be good and truthful for our life, we actually begin to challenge or suppress the truth of God. What I mean by that is, God's truth can't possibly be true for me? Surely God doesn't know what's good for me in my life. Surely this relationship I'm in that's not really healthy for me, God really doesn't know how good it feels. God really doesn't is not aware of how good it's for me. God's not aware of what it's providing for me. Surely God's truth can't be better than this particular truth. Take another example for a minute. Some of us might spend, 5 hours on media, social media, technology, phones, Facebook, Instagram, anybody like that? You're kind of keeping your hand way down. Yeah, like sometimes I asked one of the people in my family, I said, what do you think some of the idols that we worship in our family are? And immediately it was technology and then music, right? And what we think to ourselves is surely 5 hours a day of some form of media or input can't possibly be bad for me. And so we suppress the truth that some of the things God says are good for us aren't really. And then we also ask ourselves in terms of, is God's character good? We begin to ask ourselves, is God actually good enough for me? If I don't have the idol that I really want, is God better than that idol? So we start questioning the character of God. So moving on to number 3, if we worship comfort as our idol, again, idols can be good things, but when they become ultimate things, that's when they become bad. Idols can be good things made into ultimate things. They might be good things, but they make crummy gods. Like, think for a second. What's like a really good thing you're really committed to? You're just like invested in, you do it every day. You long for it, you want it. When you don't do it, you kind of miss out on it. Right? Those things, they make crummy gods. They leave us malnourished and leave our needs unmet. We don't have what we're looking for. We're needing more and feeling empty. I would argue, though, and I kind of agree with you, I never say to myself, this iced tea or these Oreo cookies are a really good idol for me, or they make a great God. I can't imagine any of us audibly or verbally say, this relationship makes a much better God than Jesus. But it happens kind of subtly, don't we? We accidentally value relationships more. We accidentally value vacation more. They're good things, but when made ultimate things, they become a malnourishing, malnutritioning God. So the man in our text, he couldn't let go of his possessions, and I love Jesus' response. He couldn't let go of his possessions, I think, for two things. Maybe he just worked hard his whole life and got them. And Jesus is only in theory asking him to give them up. We don't know if Jesus is saying, you got to give them up in order to follow me. I would argue he may be asking him to be willing to give them up. Like, rich man, are you willing to give them up and follow me? And he's not willing because for some reason, he's either worked for them all of his life and he wants them, or for somehow they just make him really comfortable. And I love Jesus' response. Jesus knows kind of the default for this. The text says Jesus loved him. The Greek word is Jesus had compassion, empathy, hurt for this man. I think for two reasons. One, the man wasn't going to follow Jesus, and he actually really wanted to. But twofold, he knew that those possessions or that comfort idol was nowhere near enough. The comfort idol could not bear the weight of all the things he actually needed. Point number 4 here. If comfort out of comfort, control, approval, and power, if comfort is your idol, there's a lie we believe. And every idol we're going to look at has these patterns. So if comfort's your idol, the lie we believe is that my life only has value or meaning if I have this particular kind of pleasure experience or a particular quality of life. My life only has value or meaning if I have a particular pleasure experience or quality of life. Let me give you a couple examples. My life only has meaning and value if I'm always stable and financially secure and comfortable. My life only has meaning or worth if I'm comfortable because of success at work and I fail less than others. My life only has meaning if I'm comfortable because I'm healthy and better looking or have a better body image than my coworker or that mom or that dad? Any of us moms or dad ever look at other moms or dads like in the same age category and think, well, I'm a little healthier than they are. Or I look a little bit better than they are. Or man, they look a lot better than I am and they're a lot more set in life than I am. I got to get with it. Right? We sometimes compare ourselves like if we only had the value and worth of being comfortable. So let's keep going. So when we worship comfort, there's a price we pay. The price we pay can be painful productivity or a lack of productivity. Here's what we mean by that. Painful productivity can look like us wanting relationship comfort. Like we're trying to produce in order to get relational comfort. And what that could look like is if we want relational comfort, we could pursue sexual comfort, body image comfort, or partnership comfort with almost anybody. And the challenge is we're so interested in that comfort, we might take measures to comfort ourselves that actually hurt us and hurt others. So if comfort is an idol, and it's a relationship idol, sometimes we'll do anything to satiate that comfort need at the painful productivity towards ourselves and towards others. Financially, we might work hard to produce or create comfort. Like, our work alone, as it stands, is not providing enough comfort for us, so we'll work even harder to produce more comfort, right? We'll work longer hours, we'll take another shift, we'll work at home in the office after the kids are in bed. Like, we'll work our fingers to the bone to provide comfort for ourselves that we're worried God can't provide for ourselves. And there's painful productivity to comfort ourselves. All right, on the other hand, though, we look at the lack of productivity. Lack of productivity can come from avoiding whatever work is in front of us. Any procrastinators here? Like, some of us just don't want to work. Some of us, I mean, we do and we don't. Like, sometimes we want to avoid the extra demands. We want to avoid the extra burden. We want to avoid the extra work. Like, there's a lack of productivity. If we're worshiping comfort, we're thinking, how can I not do something else? How can I stop doing this? How can I not put the trash bag back in the trash can? How can I not fix the toilet roll around? How can I... Remember the story about me changing the sheets in the bed the last week and putting the wet side on my wife's side? Like, how can we avoid the discomfort of having to get out of bed and dry the sheets? Right, there's what we try to avoid whatever it takes so that we can avoid productivity or just to have the comfort. How about this one? In relationships, we can have a lack of productivity by avoiding necessary conversations that we should have. So on one hand, we have painful productivity to create comfort. And on the other hand, we have lazy or a lack of productivity to avoid discomfort. So item number 6, if you worship comfort, our greatest nightmare is stress and demands. If we worship comfort, our greatest nightmare is stress and demands. Here's what that looks like. Super avoidance of stress. Like, I don't think any of us love stress. I don't think any of us love conflict. I don't think any of us love lots of demands. But what happens is we do want to avoid stress. If comfort is our idol, we'll do whatever it takes to avoid extra demands, extra stress, extra work, extra conflict. We'll just kind of hide out in our bedroom on media all day. Some of us are probably thinking of a teenage boy we have, or maybe even a spouse, or somebody else in our life who just kind of hides and doesn't want to get involved, doesn't want to do chores, doesn't want to ante up, right? We're doing whatever it takes to avoid stress and demands. How about this, though? How about for us who are workaholics? Or how about for those of us who are worried about the future? Not only do we avoid conflict or avoid stress and demands, but some of us are so afraid of discomfort in the future, we'll do whatever it takes right now. Like, we will just grind it out in order to provide future comfort to avoid stress and demands. Whether that's future relationship challenges, future finance challenges, retirement, 403B, IRA, whatever it might be, we will grind our fingers to the bone right now because we don't trust that God's going to provide for us, and we'll chase the future comfort that all of our now present day work will provide. kind of continuing on. Number seven, if comfort is our God, I make others feel hurt because laziness and workaholism has collateral damage. If comfort is my idol, like if I'm valuing comfort over God, valuing comfort over people, comfort over whatever it might be, feelings, I can hurt others' people's feelings because laziness and workaholism has collateral damage. In relationships, we'll just kind of keep looking at relationships and work. In relationships, we see others as obstacles to our comfort. In relationships, we see others as obstacles to our comfort. Relationships don't come easy. They cause stress and they have demands. For some of us, if we're interested only in comfort, we're only invested in the relationships that provide insulation from stress and demands. I don't know how that's working for you. If you're an isolationist, if you're avoiding relationships, or you think relationships are easy, relationships, not mine, of course, probably can cause some of the most stress and high demands in work in our lives, right? And some of us really, really want to avoid that. And we hurt others by being a little bit lazy with our relationship equity or our relationship pursuit. We only pursue relationships if they're going to give us insulation. And the challenge with finding, the challenge with not wanting difficult relationships is that we will bounce from people to people because those relationships, rightfully so, in order to go deep, have work involved, stress involved, demands involved, difficulty and conflict involved. So we hurt other people when we pursue comfort in relationships. We hurt other people because we keep ourselves at a distance from them or just bounce from relationship to relationship when they become work. The other thing we hurt other people with is, like I said, workaholism. I think that's a no-brainer. If you are a workaholic or just try and work to create comfort, we generally hurt the people we love the most in our life, don't we? We rob them of our time. We rob them of our love. We commit to the to-do list, the task list, the hours that it takes to work to provide the comfort. Everybody else around us can be collateral damage, either for our laziness or our workaholism. Let's jump to our last point, number nine. The good news about all of this is that God actually has an answer for us. It's very different than the comfort we're going to pursue. You guessed it, Jesus is that comfort. Here's where I'm headed with this. The good news is that Jesus is the real God and the real comfort. All of these other comfort promises, all of these other comfort gods, they can't deliver. They can never make you comfortable. If you spend all of your life trying to get comfortable, you will only be uncomfortable trying to get comfortable. They don't ante up. Look at this with point number nine. How does Jesus interface with my comfort or idolatry? In other words, how is Jesus helpful? How is Jesus the answer? How is Jesus better than all of these other truths I think are worthwhile or all of these other gods that I want so badly? 2 Corinthians says this, my grace is sufficient for you. Meaning in the midst of all the comfort we're chasing, in the midst of all the reasons we're pursuing comfort, we're chasing all kinds of coping mechanisms, another vacation after this vacation, more hours of work, like all of the challenges we're trying to mitigate, Jesus is saying, I know they're empty for you, and because they're empty for you, rely on me, my grace is sufficient for you. I know that's a Sunday school answer we've heard almost our entire life. Here's what that means. Grace, as you probably know, is a free, unconditional gift. What he's saying is, all of those other things that let you down, remember, I've got unconditional power and presence and provision for you. I've got unconditional love for you. I've got unconditional forgiveness for you. When you're struggling with coping and trying to get comfortable, I'm your real comfort. I'm providing unconditional comfort for you. When you're struggling, when you're sick, focus on grace. When you're poor and struggling financially, focus on grace. When your marriage is in difficult demands and you can't get comfortable enough, remember grace. When you're tired and you're strung out, remember God's grace. Meaning, when everything's hitting the fan, you can always fall back on the fact that God's got enough grace for whatever it is you're going through. The second text there, we'll quit on this here, Matthew 11, 28 through 30 says this very familiar text to all of us. Come to me, all who are weary, and I will give you rest. Very common phrase for us. Rest is the antithesis or the opposite of the hamster wheel. Rest is the antithesis or the antonym of chasing everything we can ever get for comfort that doesn't provide. In this text here, Jesus is talking to a group of people, I believe it's in Jerusalem, and they are on the hamster wheel that the legalistic religious leaders have created for them. And the religious leaders, they have spun that hamster wheel, and the people are on it. And what I mean by that is all of the people are working their hearts to the bone, even if that's the right metaphor. They're trying to keep all the 613 laws so that they can have the comfort of God's love. They're trying to be perfect so that they can have the comfort of God's forgiveness. And it's just not working. So he says to them, if you're tired and working your finger to the bone of trying to find comfort, come to me, all who are weary, and I'll give you rest. The word rest in the Greek is sabbaton, which is also the Hebrew word for Sabbath. We get this word rest in the New Testament all the way from Genesis when God says, you need a day of rest. You need to shut down if you really want to be comfortable. So he says, take a day off, take a day of rest or Sabbath rest for refreshment and spend time with me on that seventh day. If you look further in the Old Testament, the word Canaan, the promised land, a slice of heaven, he says, I'm going to create a place of rest for you. So God's always laying down this foundation that he provides rest. A seventh day of rest, a place called Canaan rest. In the New Testament, we learn that Jesus is our final rest. We learn that Jesus says, I'm the true Sabbath. So when we're chasing all other things for Sabbath rest, Jesus says, I'm your slice of heaven. I'm your Canaan. Nothing else, I hate to use this Christianese phrase, nothing else is like the milk and honey that Canaan's going to provide. You can chase it all you want. Your bikes, your music, your radio stations, your houses, your vacations, your cars, your multiple relationship infidelity affairs, your pornography, your drugs, you can chase it, but it's only going to leave you high and dry. And he says, I'm your true rest. So friends, today, if you're like Jesus says, if you're weary on trying to find comfort, actually, I'm going to pull a Vanilla Ice quote here. If you're looking for love in all the wrong places, if you're trying to find comfort in all the wrong places, Jesus is saying, I'm the right place. Let's close. Oh, Father in heaven, thank you for being so good. Thank you for having big, big, broad shoulders to carry us, a huge heart to love us where we are. Thank you for comforting us when we crawl up to you. Lord, thank you for forgiving us, for being unconditional with your presence, your power, and your promises, Lord. God, I pray a special blessing over this conversation that you would make us keenly aware, like just put it in front of us, Lord, that thing we're chasing for comfort, that's we're actually robbing us of comfort. And I beg of you, Father in heaven, would you meet us where we are when we finally see that God? In Jesus' name, amen.